This is Ozarks at Large for the first day of March 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Little Chief, a band comprised of four University of Arkansas students, perform inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Plus, we have the conclusion of our two-part conversation with John McDonnell, the most successful coach in NCAA history.
First, the federal government has agreed to pay 100% of the cost for a Medicaid expansion in Arkansas for 3 years, and the state gets to decide what mechanism should be the delivery vehicle for health insurance. In an interview with Talk Business Arkansas, State Surgeon General Dr. Joe Thompson says these new developments mean Arkansas can choose a private health insurance product as opposed to expanding the state-run Medicaid program. He says this will address key concerns for certain lawmakers.
First and foremost, we're not growing state government and expanding the number of people who are on basically a welfare card or public assistance through the Medicaid program. We are using the private sector and the efficiencies in the private sector to deliver care. For the consumer, they will get the same experience as individuals at higher incomes that are covered by private insurance companies, so they're not in a two-tiered system.
Thompson also says provider payments will be at a full cost payment and not a percentage cost payment that Medicaid providers are subject to today.
The Arkansas Senate is advancing a bill to Governor Mike Beebe that would ban most abortions after 12 weeks of pregnancy. This comes immediately after the upper chamber voted Thursday to override the governor's veto of a bill banning most abortions after 20 weeks. Representative Andy Mayberry, a Republican from Hensley, sponsored a 20-week ban and told reporters just outside the state chamber, the bill has been a personal mission for him.
It's different than some kind of tax cut bill or something like that. This has an immediate effect on the lives of babies.
Abortion rights advocates and the governor have said the bill is unconstitutional, but Mayberry says he's not too concerned there will be legal challenges because similar 20-week abortion bans in other states are already being challenged in court, and any decision there would likely apply to the Arkansas law. Those challenges may be focused at the 12-week ban because it would likely be the most restrictive abortion law in the country. Jill June, CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, which operates Planned Parenthood clinics in Little Rock and Fayetteville, says the bills are a surprising blow to women's health in the state.
It's a shocking disregard for the Constitution and the women of the state of Arkansas. And yes, I was deeply shocked and saddened to see that the legislature had sunk to this new low.
Though the governor vetoed the 20-week ban, he wouldn't tell reporters what his plans are for the 12-week ban.
I'm not going to tell you any more than I always tell you, which is I'll let you know when I take the action.
The governor generally says he doesn't talk about vetoes until he makes them, but he has said he thinks it's more unconstitutional than the 20-week ban. However, with today's vote, the governor's veto likely won't prevent the more restrictive law from taking effect.
Retail giant Walmart yesterday announced its progress in bringing healthier food choices to its customers. 2 years ago, the company unveiled its Healthier Foods Initiative, which included a list of commitments the retailer pledged to implement by the end of 2015. Among those commitments was one to introduce a Great For You label to be included on the company's private label Great Value and Market Side brands. The icon, already in place or set to be included on products by the end of this year, is meant to show consumers which foods in the grocery aisle are healthier than others. Walmart Senior Vice President of Sustainability Andrea Thomas says company officials developed the criteria for foods receiving the label more than 2 years ago.
We looked very closely at the 2010 Dietary Guidelines for Americans, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration information, USDA, and Institute of Medicine. So we evaluated more than 4,000 private brand products against the Great For You criteria, and we found that about 32% of them qualified, which included fresh produce, meat, and packaged items.
She says some foods that would seemingly meet the criteria for the front of package labels surprisingly didn't make the cut at first.
So one example of that was our salsa, our Great Value salsa, initially had too much sugar to get in. And so we reformulated it so that we could reduce the sugar to a level that it did qualify for the Great For You icon. I think snack nuts is another example. Some of the snack nuts would fit, especially the ones that are roasted without salt. Some of the flavored ones had too much sodium, and so they didn't fit. And so now when you go up and down that aisle, you can and see where you can make a choice, and some of them will have it and some of them will not have it.
And reformulating foods in its private label brand is another commitment Walmart made in order to provide healthier food options. Thomas says the company has reduced sugars by more than 10% in the dairy, sauces, and fruit drink categories, while sodium content has been reduced by 9% in the grains, lunch meat, and frozen entree categories. In addition, the company intends on building more stores in USDA classified food deserts, typically low-income census tracts where a substantial number of residents have low access to a supermarket or large grocery store. Walmart plans to open between 250 and 300 stores in food deserts. So far, the company has opened 86 such stores.
Earlier this week, the Arkansas Agriculture Department announced the release of a new annual publication. The magazine, titled Arkansas Grown, will feature articles about the farms, forests, foods, and exports of Arkansas. According to a press release from the Agriculture Department, the articles featured in the magazine highlight the importance of the $16 billion agriculture industry to the state's economy. The magazine can be viewed online at ar-agriculture.com. Hard copies can be obtained by calling the department at 501-683-4851.
The Razorback baseball team yesterday began its four-game set in the Coca-Cola Classic in Surprise, Arizona. The Diamond Hogs lost to the Arizona State Sun Devils 3-2. With the loss, the Razorbacks fall to 7-2 on the season. The team returns to the field this evening to face Gonzaga. First pitch is scheduled for 5 p.m.
A slight chance of flurries this evening in northwest Arkansas tonight, with lows from the mid to upper 20s. There is a slight chance for flurries in the early morning tomorrow, with a high near 37 degrees in northwest Arkansas. Expect partly sunny conditions with a high near 45 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Clear tomorrow night with lows from 18 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 25 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Joining me now on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com, which covers politics, business, and much more for the entire listening area. Hello.
Well, hello. You do that. You sound much better than Kyle.
Well, we won't
now,
tell
now
him.
Now Kyle's going to give me grief when he returns.
Well, we won't tell him.
But I have no sympathy for someone who gets to travel with the Razorbacks and watch him play baseball.
Exactly. He has such a tough life. So tough. Well, in his absence, I'm happy that you're still here to talk to me a little bit about some of the stories you guys published on the City Wire this week. One of the stories on Whirlpool, that poor company is coming up in your news.
Right. You know, Whirlpool, of course, they closed the plant back in June. I remember at one time it employed about 4,500 people in the Fort Smith area.
Mm.
But in June of last year, it closed. And when you close a plant, obviously there are a lot of things to remediate. One of those are the pollution. And this has been an interesting development. Early February meeting, Whirlpool and their attorneys came to the Fort Smith Board of Directors during the study session and said, look, we want to pass this ordinance that bans groundwater or water well digging in this certain area near the plant because there's this chemical called TCE, which is a pretty nasty little chemical. It's in the groundwater. Whirlpool said it's no big deal and it's not spreading, that type of thing. Well, turns out there was a January 22nd letter, which was before the February meeting, in which some of the Whirlpool claims aren't necessarily true about the pollution and that type of thing. And so there are some members of the Fort Smith Board of Directors who aren't happy. They feel like Whirlpool has lied to them.
Mm.
About the extent of the pollution and how to mitigate pollution. You know, Fort Smith City Administrator Ray Gossick took somewhat of a softer tone, as we said, and he said, you know, he's trying to play the good cop in this, but it just on the surface, no pun intended, but on the surface, looks like Whirlpool was saying one thing at this February meeting, knowing that something else could be true. Now, there'll be future sessions on this, and we had difficulty getting any comment out of Whirlpool, so it'll be interesting to see what they say publicly at the next board meeting.
Has there been any sort of timeline put on how long, when something like this happens, like you said, you have to clean up some of the pollution that's left behind? Did they say anything about how long they expect that to take? I mean, now that obviously may have changed, but.
You ask a great question, and that is one of several questions that a lot of people would like to know. And I think that's part of the problem. You know, what are the, you know, Whirlpool said, we've tried all the ways to mitigate this and, you know, and remove this, but none of them work, so now we need this ban. Well, this letter from the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality said, well, there are a couple more options left. So it was even untrue to some extent what Whirlpool said about they had gone through all the options. So your question is one of several that I suspect will be asked and hopefully answered in the next few weeks or months.
Another story you guys had this week had to do with some trouble that Tyson had been having.
Well, Tyson Foods, yeah, 3 or 4 years ago, people forget, you know, Tyson is doing very well now, and they're performing well in what is a tough market in terms of, consumer spending, in terms of high costs for their commodities, for their feed products. But we go back to 2008, which maybe 4 years ago or more, but it's not that long in corporate history, they were in a $1.8 billion hole, so to speak. Their credit rating was tanking. It was looking tough for the company, but Donnie Smith, their CEO now, who took over in January 2009, spoke recently to a group there in Northwest Arkansas. And as I said, he was pretty candid about the troubles they were in and talked about how that they had to get back on focused. And he told the crowd that, you know, part of the focus that they used, that he used, was making the main thing the main thing, which is, you know, they, at the end of the day, they sell, you know, beef, pork, and chicken, and let's focus. Let's get back and focus on that. And he talked about how they had to improve their culture and provide clarity and communication to at all levels of the company. But it's just interesting story. It's a good read for anyone who's interested in the corporate world in Northwest Arkansas about what he has to say about turning a business around, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, meat production, processing, and distribution companies in the world.
Another big company in Northwest Arkansas, of course, Walmart. And on Wednesday, there was a memo sent out that Tom Mars will be exiting next month.
Right. Well, it was an internal memo. I don't think they wanted it sent out. But
sure.
Yes, Tom Mars, and he's Executive Vice President, Chief Administrative Officer. And it's interesting. We have to be careful here. We have to be very careful here. But he has been involved and has been tied to some of these bribery allegations regarding, Mexico and how they were those stores were built out so quick there in Mexico. And, he's tied to this. And there's been some wonderment, so to speak, if heads roll within Walmart, for those that may have been tied to this, some of the alleged robbery, when will that start and who will it be? Now, like I said, we have to be careful with this, but it's there is a link. We don't know the extent to the link, but it's interesting to see Mars, who was pretty well connected, pretty high up in the company, had exited. And there was not a lot of – Walmart didn't put out a statement fully explaining, you know, is it just a normal retirement? Is he did he just leave for other opportunities or what? So that – not knowing creates the mystery.
Sure. And as you noted, it's an internal memo that the City Wire was able to obtain, but Walmart has not publicly, or they have publicly declined to comment. So
right.
Lots of questions.
Yes. And so we'll see. I suspect that over the next 6 to 9 months, we're going to see more. We may see a few more similar departures where it's Walmart will want it to be as quiet as possible.
Well, we'll keep our eyes open for that story. And a little bit of good news, bad news. Allen's Canning moving jobs from Van Buren to Siloam Springs.
Yes, and that's perfect. It is a good news, bad news. It's bad news for the Van Buren area, for the Fort Smith region, which has struggled anyway with employment issues. But Allen's is moving roughly 150 jobs. Let me say there are roughly 150 jobs that are leaving Van Buren as part of their production operation there, and they're consolidating that operation there at their facility in Siloam Springs. We don't know how many of those jobs will be added in Siloam Springs. I mean, will that consolidation require 25, 50, or all 150 new? We don't know. But as we note in our story, it's not going to help the Northwest or the Fort Smith area, which has seen its workforce, the workforce size and the number of employed decline. For example, December was the 48th consecutive month that the metro jobless rate in the Fort Smith region has been at or above 7%, and that's a rough number. But it's the opposite in Northwest Arkansas. It's one of the top performing metro areas in the country. The December jobless rate there was 5.1%. It was below the 5.7% in December 2011. The workforce size continues to grow. The number of employed continues to grow. For example, in December, there were 4,700 more jobs in Northwest Arkansas than there were in December 2011. So it's kind of feast or famine right now, a feast and famine for the two regions.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com, which covers politics, business, and much more for the entire listening area. Thank you, Michael.
Yes, ma'am.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, we pay tribute to a man we lost last week, Magic Slim. We also have Curtis Salgado, Imelda May, Peter Karp, R.J. Michaud, and a few others. That's the Generic Blues Show, every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
John McDonald coached more national championship-winning teams than any other person in NCAA history. His national titles in track and field and cross-country all came at the University of Arkansas. In his new book, John McDonald, written with Andrew Maloney and published by the University of Arkansas Press, the path to the track and field dynasty is described. In the second part of this conversation with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums, John McDonald talks about how bringing athletes like Niall O'Shaughnessy, Mike Conley, and Frank O'Meara helped build the most successful college program in history.
Well, it just felt like it was the man above him must be taking care of him because, you know, Mike Conley and Mike Conley, great. I mean, they were great athletes, but they were even better people. And when young guys started coming in for recruiting visits, man, I didn't have enough scholarships to give out. You know, they all wanted to come because, man, I heard about O'Shaughnessy, I heard about Mike Conley, and they are really nice guys, and they were.
And Conley seems to be a kindred spirit with you because there's the one meet that you talk about where he's already doing the long jump, he's already doing the triple jump, he's already in a couple of runs, and he tells you he's going to anchor another relay.
Yeah.
He wants more points, and you say, hold on.
I said to him, Mike, I don't want to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. I said, enough is enough. You're not going to run it. And he said, no, we might need the points. You know, at the end there, we might need the points. And I said, well, if we do, but I said, you're not going to get hurt doing it, you know. And as it turned out, we won it anyways. But he was the only guy that used to come into my office. I always studied the meet beforehand, mm-hmm. and I really knew what the other teams had pretty good. And he came into the first championship that we won, and he said, how many points have you down? I said, 90. 90. And he said, I got 92. And we're over the events and they were amazingly close. Mm. And here's this jumper now.
Right.
My gosh, some jumpers never even know that there's distance runners. Where he had figured out how good our distance runners were and every event down. And he came up to 1600 relay, the last event, and he said, we'll get 8 points. We'll get second there. We cannot win. I said, no, we're not going to run it because we're not good enough. We don't have. And he said, I'll anchor it.
You mentioned that as a runner, you learned from your mistakes. You learned to hold back. You also write that you learned as a coach. You were a coach for a long time, and sometimes you learn from the athletes, just like they always learn from you.
Oh, absolutely. Well, my saying was, you can learn more from listening than talking. And let the athlete, let him have his day, you know, I used to always sit down and ask him what those young guys, what were your goals and where do you want to go? And, of course, sometimes our goals are humongous, you know, and they want it now, not 2 years later. Mm-hmm. And then after I knew what they wanted, I'd say, hey, well, you and I are on the same page, but we might try and tweak a few things, you know. I said, you had a great high school coach. Never knock the high school coach. That's not a good thing to do, because the kid that comes in that believes in his high school coach, you better not go and say, well, hey, you're in Arkansas now and you're in college and that was high school, we're changing the whole thing. Don't ever do that. I never do that, because you pull the rug out from under him, you know, his security blanket.
One thing I took from this book is that one thing you don't like is complacency.
Yes.
Fair?
That's fair.
One of the athletes says, you know, this is after you've won a good number of national championships. One of your athletes said, Coach, you're never going to be happy. And yeah. He said, yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah. I remember that happened not just for one, but I remember one in particular, and he was really happy that he made the final at the conference meet. He was a 1,500-meter kid, and he improved from high school. And he was going around giving high fives to everybody. And I said, what are you so happy about? He said, well, I had a personal best by 3 seconds in the metric mile. And I said, are you in the final? And he said, well, no, but I'm just a freshman. I said, I don't care if you're a freshman. It doesn't matter who gets the points. We never look at them for the freshmen or seniors, you know. So, boy, he said, well, you're never happy. Walked off, but then later I gave a pat on the back, and I said, hey, you had a great race and better to come, but don't ever settle for second best.
When you're a coach of a team, you're like a CEO. And so you have to manage. You have to know who to stroke, who to encourage. How did you learn that?
Well, I tell you what, I learned that from my college coach. He was a terrific motivator, absolutely. He was on his own. Back then, most college didn't have assistants. If they had, it was a grad assistant. But he would get the guys so fired up for the conference meet, and he spoke to them and talked to them individually, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he did it to me, too, and blow, you know, I'd walk out of there, walking out on air, you know, out of his room, his office, because I felt, dang, that guy really thinks I'm great, you know.
Were you ever too hard on yourself?
Well, I'll tell you the one thing I think I did that is, I made coaching is a tough career, and to do it right, it takes 100%. John Wooden said 97% mm-hmm. is as much as he ever got out of anybody. But I think 100% of your time, and sometimes I think I neglected. I like going home, back home to Ireland. After I came to Arkansas, I didn't go home for 15 years. And when I went back after those 15 years, that's when I realized, heck, I'm an old guy. Because I met some of my schoolmates, and my brother introduced me and said, you know him. I said, I think I know the face. And then when he told me who he was, I said, wow. I said, do I look that old? You know? He said, yep.
Yeah, that's the realization. Not because you see yourself in the mirror every day, but when you see your contemporaries.
Contemporaries.
Yeah.
And some of them were, you know, younger than I they looked pretty good. But there was a few of them that said, oh, my gosh. And that I came back, and my wife was over there, and the kids were with us. But I said, I'm going to spend a little bit more time with my family, because time is just slipping away.
You have all those rings, all those championships, all those conference championships, national championships, but you can go around Northwest Arkansas and see some of the athletes who ran for you having very successful lives. You drive around, yeah. There's David Swain with a company, yeah. Seneca Lasser, and all the coaches that are around. Yes. That's got to make you feel very good.
It does, because there for years, none of my athletes went into coaching at all. And I always told him, you're better off not. You know, it's not for a family, it's tough on a family to be a coach, because you got to put so many hours. And many things can happen. Kid get into trouble or something like that, they call the coach. Mm-hmm. And whether it's 5 o'clock in the evening or 5 o'clock in the morning, you got to go and check it out. But I was very fortunate that I'm not bragging about it, but very little problems that we, because we had strict rules about alcohol and all that type of stuff. And drugs, I had I had a rule where one time if you get involved with drugs, you're gone.
Zero.
Yeah. No second chance at all. And alcohol, we always said, you know, if you get intoxicated and it comes to my desk, there'll be consequences. And then the second time, I call your parents. Yeah. So we didn't have much problem. Now, I'm not saying the guys didn't have a few beers and all that.
But, yeah, and the ones who are coaches and then the ones who have the businesses or have made a great success and stayed here, Ruben Reyna, you see, yeah. And O'Mara down in Little Rock.
Yeah.
There's a great legacy there.
Oh, yeah, there is. And you know, there's a lot of them are doctors and all that. I think 17 of them went on to be doctors. And it's nice to get the most gratifying thing is I've had letters when I retired from kids that were on the team that never scored a point, you know, in a conference meet, but thanking me for what I did for them as a person, straightened them out and kept them on the team and all that type of stuff. So it was, that's gratifying. You never think about that, you do somebody a favor, but in their eyes, it was great to be just a part of it.
Finally, very few of us when we're young know where we're going to go. But you're a teenager in Ireland, and then you look back and see who you're standing next to in some of these pictures. There's Roger Bannister handing you an award. There's the future president of the United States when Governor Bill Clinton handing you an award for the first national championship. The Prime Minister of Ireland. I mean, it's been a wild, fun ride, hasn't it?
It has. I'll tell you, it has been an unbelievable trip when I look back on it, because just a poor farm boy from Ireland, and one of eight kids in tough times, just right after I was born in the middle of World War II, you know, so 1938. So there were tough times. I can remember in 1944, I think it was, when there were still planes flying around, and we used to. When the planes, the Ireland was not involved, even though it got bombed a couple of times, Dublin did. But you know, those planes scared the heck out of you because everybody thought they were fighter planes. You know.
Sure. Congratulations on the book, and thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Charlie.
The book John McDonnell is published by the University of Arkansas Press and written with Andrew Maloney. He'll discuss the book and sign copies at 6:30 p.m. Thursday, March 7th at the Fayetteville Public Library. Again at 9 Saturday morning, March 9th at Hog Heaven, located inside Bud Walton Arena. And at 2 in the afternoon, March 16th at Rush Running in Bentonville. He talked with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums earlier this month.
It is March 1st, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And joining us now is Becca Martin Brown. She is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So what are you the most excited about?
Jersey Wait. Boys.
Guess the question.
She did guess the question.
If you all haven't heard, the Walton Arts Center Broadway season for 2013-14.
Already.
Holy cow.
I know, it's
cow,
barely March.
Has been released.
Yep.
What's your vote, Antoinette?
I'm actually pretty pleased with the entire selection of what I saw. I'm excited to see Chicago on stage.
It's a good one.
Saw the movie, wasn't quite set on it, but I feel like if I saw it on stage, I would really like it.
I think I must be old because the two I'm most excited about are I Love Lucy and White Christmas.
Okay, well, that one too, because I was actually on the phone with my grandmother when I got the press release, and I was like, oh my goodness, I Love Lucy.
See, now your grandmother's really feel excited?
Old. Oh, yes.
Well, and now I really feel old.
Well, no, no, well, no, no. We, no, my point is we used to watch it together. I used to watch it with my grandmother, so I know what this is.
So this is good.
See?
Okay, here's the season. September 3rd through 8th, Jersey Boys. They say it is the most asked for ticket. They think it is the most likely show to sell out.
Right. Okay. And please tell me, Jersey Boys,
It's about the Four Seasons, the musicians who became the Four Seasons.
And I know I've asked you this repeatedly, and everybody's always really excited about it.
They did songs like Sherry, Big Girls Don't Cry, Ragdoll, Can't Take My Eyes Off of You.
Is this the thing that I get confused with Million Dollar Quartet?
Yes, yes, it is.
Because they're people from Jersey Boys.
Right,
yes. The original cast.
Precisely, yes. Precisely.
Okay, confusion, done.
Yes, which is what I was trying to get out, yeah.
Thank you.
You just couldn't get the words out in between us. Okay, so it'll be fun. 2006 Tony Award winner for Best Musical. First time in Northwest Arkansas. November 19th through 24th, White Christmas. Irving Berlin classic movie, I think.
Bing Crosby?
Mm-hmm. But
probably.
Who was the dancer? Was it Gene Kelly?
That would be my go-to.
I think there's a dancer.
We think so.
Okay. The vote is Gene Kelly. But this is new from Broadway. Songs like Blue Skies, How Deep Is the Ocean, and of course White Christmas. It's the story of two buddies putting on a show at a Vermont Inn and finding their perfect sweethearts.
That has
the
song
time.
Sisters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I like that movie.
I Love Lucy, February 4th through 9th. It's a musical. Here's the premise. You're a member of the studio audience.
Okay.
About to watch the filming of two very familiar I Love Lucy episodes.
Yes.
I don't see how, if you know the show at all, it could not be fun. March 11th through 16th, Chicago. April 1st through 6th. The Wizard of Oz.
Why,
With the songs from the movie.
Okay.
And new songs by Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh, really?
That wrote Evita?
Yeah.
Right. I know who they are, but when did they write the Wizard of Oz songs?
Why did they write new songs?
I don't know.
Wait, are these new songs
that
they wrote?
These are new songs that they wrote to go with the original songs. I assume it's kind of like Little Mermaid that there's probably a big sweeping theme.
Okay.
That they wrote.
Okay.
It's been on Broadway. I know nothing about it, but we'll find out come April. Okay, here's how tickets work. If you are already a season subscriber to the Broadway season, you can buy your tickets now.
Okay.
If you want to be a subscriber to the Broadway season but are not, you can pre-reserve your tickets now.
Okay.
And then I think the pickup date is in April sometime.
Okay.
In the summer, single tickets will become available.
Okay.
For individual shows.
Christina and I were talking about that earlier, trying to remember. It seemed like it was early for the season to be announced because I felt like we couldn't get a hold of tickets until like May or something. Mm-hmm. But this is for people that are already
subscribers.
Okay.
Or you can pre-reserve, which
right.
I'm not sure the difference between pre-reserve and buying. You still get them. So.
Well, maybe subscribers get better
first choice.
Better seats or something.
But you can go ahead and do something that will acquire you a season ticket. You also get first access to these shows. Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, I'm excited about that one.
The Wonder Bread Years.
What is that one?
Do you know?
It's a comedy. I've seen and heard about it, but I don't know much about it.
Is it anything like The Wonder Years? Because I did like that show.
I think it is based on that time period.
Okay.
Moscow Classical Ballet's The Nutcracker. Broadway on Ice.
I saw that and was confused.
Don't know how we're getting ice.
Okay.
That's never happened.
I don't think. I've seen them do rain when Eloise or something came a few years ago, and they had kind of a trilogy, and then I think the one I went to was specifically rain, and they were able to make it rain, and there was water that they slid across on stage. That was really cool.
Maybe something like that.
But I mean, this sounds like ice skating.
Right.
And if it's Broadway on Ice,
maybe
it's ice
skating.
Well,
I mean, you have the ice skating rinks that people temporarily put up in like parking lots
and
stuff.
Yes, and I've seen it done at other venues.
Okay.
So I know that can be done.
Okay.
It'll be interesting.
Okay.
It happens next January. Maybe we'll just go outside.
Maybe.
And Ramsey Lewis and John Pizzarelli Straighten Up and Fly Right, the Nat King Cole tribute, which is next April. So there you go. Call the Walton Arts Center at 443-5600 to find out more. And if you're looking for something to do this weekend, the Dig In Food and Farming Festival is going on. The 2013 edition at the Global Campus on the Fayetteville Square. Classes for gardeners, films about farming. Fun for everyone who likes food.
All right.
You can find out more at diginfestival.com. Bentonville High School has shows up this weekend. A show called Every 17 Minutes, the Crowd Goes Crazy.
Yes, I got to go and hang out with them during a rehearsal.
Oh, you did.
I did, yeah, and it should be fun.
Did you see their student works, The Voices from the Halls?
I have. They were working on it. Is this the
It happens at the same time.
The piece
time.
That's
yeah.
going with the devised work that's going with it. They were working in the process of working on it when I went by.
If you think, why would I want to go see a high school production? Let me tell you that their drama teacher is Justin Schauer.
Exactly.
That should be all you need to know. 7 o'clock today and Saturday, 2 o'clock Sunday at the Arend Arts Center at Bentonville High School. Tickets are $5 to $7. Last weekend for Sons of the Prophet at Theater Squared. 7:30 today and tomorrow, 2 and 7 Sunday. Last weekend for A Streetcar Named Desire at University Theater in Fayetteville. 8 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock Sunday. This is the Orchid Show weekend at the Botanical Garden.
Is it already?
If you want to ooh and ah.
I can't believe that either.
I know.
6:30 for the reception tonight. That's $10. The show and sale is 9 to 5 tomorrow and 9 to 4 Sunday. And that's $5 admission. If you think you're going to go there and buy orchids, I strongly suggest that you do it early.
Okay.
Because we moseyed in about 10 o'clock last year and there wasn't an orchid to be had.
That late. Wow. Mm-hmm.
And so early. The last thing that I want you all to think about is getting on stage yourself.
Okay.
The Speak for Yourself open mic is 8 o'clock on Friday night, 8 o'clock tonight, at the Artist Laboratory Theater at BN Limited in Fayetteville. They want you to come and tell a story. No script, no attempt to be funny. Just come tell a story.
This is part of the Sheet Fort experience.
Yes.
They have kind of a month's worth of events lined up.
And I think it would be just really fascinating fun. You can find out more about that by calling Erica Wilhide at 405-535-6652 or check out today's What's Up, where there's all sorts of other goodies.
Okay. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night beginning at 10 p.m. This Friday on Shades of Jazz, I will feature music that will be performed by artists that will be in and around our area. Particularly at the Walton Arts Center. We'll hear music from Dee Dee Bridgewater and Chris Potter, Christian McBride. We'll also hear from the Hot Club of Detroit and Jamie Owsley. This and much more, Friday at 10 p.m. on Shades of Jazz.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Recently, the four members of the band Little Chief came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk to Kyle Kellums and myself. Matt Cooper, Andrew Myers, Ellie Turner, and Matthew Heckman are all students at the University of Arkansas. We talked to them for a few minutes, then they played two songs, one an original and the other, let's just say it's a surprising take on a well-established pop hit. They have a new EP out, and it was made possible by an anonymous donor.
Back in May of 2012, we decided to enter this contest put on by East Hall Studios here in Fayetteville, and we were one of, I think it was...
12
bands, yeah. We were one of 12 bands that were selected to receive a free EP, and so we're just now getting that hammered out. We're almost finished with that. We're in the reproduction stage right now, and so we're planning on having that here in February.
So does that mean the East Hall studio time was free?
Yeah, completely free. And the thing is, we don't know who the donor was, and I'm not sure if they'll ever give us that name, but we're truly grateful to that person.
Awesome.
Yeah, East Hall Studios like done a super great job with the recording and the mixing so far. So big thanks to them and big thanks to whoever the donor was.
And so it was you and then 11 other musical acts also benefited?
And they're all local bands from a ton of different genres. And I've heard some of the first mixes of their stuff, and it's all sounding great. So they did an awesome job over there at East Hall.
Sometimes how the Charlotte sound or
a place gets a sound, the reputation, if you have a lot of bands. So that's pretty cool.
Now, you guys are wrapping up the EP, but it already has a name, Somewhere Near the River.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you guys got that name?
Well, the title track, it's actually the title track, and the whole song is really, it's got a really ghosty feel, and basically it's about, like, a guy who's seen this girl, and but this girl has, like, just disappeared, and he can't find her, and he's doing everything, and it's driving him crazy, and so we just kind of let that be the focus, and so the album's got a ton of different feels. It's kind of ghosty, it's kind of upbeat, and but really that's just kind of what the Little Chief sound is. It's got a ton of different styles for every type of listener.
How many tracks will be on the EP?
We're going to have five.
Five. And are they all originals?
All originals.
Okay.
So we know how the EP got its name. How did Little Chief become your moniker?
Well, the story goes...
You look toward the drummer.
Well, the story goes that Little Chief is this town in Oklahoma. And back in the 50s, it was an oil boom town. And in the 50s, it had a ton of people there because obviously the whole Tulsa oil field sprung up. And but now, apparently, Little Chief, the story goes that Little Chief is this deserted ghost town. And... we're really into ghosts, and that's kind of the feel we were going for the album. And we love Indians, and we think they're like the coolest thing ever. And so, yeah, we just thought the name stuck.
Now, you guys have a couple of videos on a YouTube channel, but you have performed live at different venues. We read that you played at all kinds of venues.
Yeah,
I believe so that's a quote. All kinds of venues. What?
What does that mean? What kind of venues? Some interesting ones?
Or? Yeah, we. Back last year, we've played in the normal coffee houses and all those things that normal folk bands play. But last year, we were invited to perform in the University of Arkansas's Greek Theater.
Oh.
And we actually opened for, the organization was called Beta Upsilon Chi, and they had this island party type thing. And they asked us to open for this Christian rapper. And so it was kind of weird because we're like these skinny little white kids playing our acoustic instruments, and you have this big, strong black man who's an incredible rapper, and he was just, and it was kind of a weird, like, different genres coming together. And so when we say we've played for, like, any type of genre, like, we have.
I think we also, you and I, played in the elevators in... In one of the dorms on campus.
Yeah.
I guess we just got kind of bored, and we just were like, man, I'm going to play some music. Let's play in the elevator.
We're pretty good about, I don't want to use transcending, but we like, we don't want to stick with normal venues a lot of times. So whether that looks like an elevator or on a public transit bus, whenever they let us, that's what we look for when we can't get a normal venue.
So when you're performing on an elevator, you get in the elevator, you just go wherever it goes, and you're playing the whole time?
Basically, whatever floors they stop on, people get on, and it never fails. It is always hot, so hot.
Oh, my gosh, yes, it gets so terribly hot.
So a lot of times the buildings will have two elevators side by side, and we'll just go back and forth.
Switch between the elevators.
You mentioned a bus. Have you played on a bus?
Yeah, I played, I guess it was I want to say November, I met this bus driver at the University of Arkansas, and I just, like, made friends with instant connection, me and him, and his name is Carl, and Carl and I was like, Carl, you mind if I play some music on your bus? And I sat there for, like, an hour and a half and just, like, played through my whole repertoire of songs, and he was like, man, you guys are great. And so it was a good old time with Carl on Arkansas bus.
You guys are talking about your sound, and you've been compared to the Lumineers and Mumford & Sons, the Head and the Heart, which is a compliment because those are all very, you know, pretty successful bands. But is it kind of, I don't know, is it scary for you guys to be compared to good bands? Like, oh, okay, we have to really try hard to make sure that we live up to that.
Yeah, like before we were recording this EP, we had sort of a sound that we thought we sounded like, and we've got some elements of the Lumineers with their really echoey shouts and Mumford & Sons with their driving melodies and whatnot. And but by the time we got done recording this album, I kind of looked at the guys and I was like, wow, like we thought we sounded like all these bands, but now we kind of like don't have anyone to describe our sound to. And so I was like, I don't know if that's good or that's terrible. But hopefully it turned out pretty well.
And so when the EP is out, it will be available digitally. Is that correct?
Yeah, on all major distribution.
Amazon, iTunes.
Yeah.
Will there be any physical copies?
Oh, yeah. We're going to have plenty, so if anyone wants any.
Well, should we hear some music?
We should.
Okay.
This one is called...
North Carolina.
North Carolina.
To you as it fell. Now you're in my way. Dream my soul for a wish, pennies and dimes for a kiss. I wasn't looking for this. Now you're in my way.
Little Chief is Matt Cooper, Andrew Myers, Ellie Turner, and Matthew Heckman. Their EP is titled Somewhere Near the River and is available on iTunes. The band recently performed inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. More information is available at facebook.com/littlechiefmusic.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, and Tontytown.
Hooray, Tawny Town. And you'll have a story from there soon.
Yes, on Sunday.
On Sunday, and it's about the
American Red Cross.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Excellent. Quick note here, the Washington Regional Gala, which is set for April 2nd at the Walton Arts Center, tickets for that go on sale today. You can get those at waltonartscenter.org. This year, the headlining band is Cool in the Gang. Probably know them for Celebration.
Right.
It's one of their bigger hits.
Woo.
Woohoo. So there you go. So we're going to celebrate the weekend because it's now the weekend. And another quick note, the University of Arkansas football team's first red-white spring game under head coach Brett Bielema will begin at 2 p.m. on April 20th. And that was announced earlier this week, so people can get ready for that coming up in the spring. And as we start getting ready for football. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in for Weekend Ozarks at Large at 9 on Sunday morning. We will both be back.
We will.
Have a great weekend.
Happy Friday.